Well, as Rob said, my name's Kev. I'm the minister of the church, and it's really great to have you with us this evening. Thank you for being part of this. I need to say a few thank yous as we begin. First of all, to Chev, who's basically built this technological platform that we're meeting you in this evening. So Chev's basically moved in. Thank you, Chev, for all that you've done over just a very few days, and helped by Mark, Callum, Megan, Ed and others. So grateful that you guys have made this possible for us to meet like this evening. I want to say thanks to all of you in the small groups as well. I loved hearing those reports from Rob just now. Thank you for your commitment to looking towards those groups as the place where you would seek comfort and to be a comfort at this time. Thanks for being creative about actually making it happen, and thanks for remaining relational. We are relational beings, and we'll need that support of those groups going forward. And I want to say thanks to you, whoever you are, for prioritizing this time now. I hope, as Rob said, you'll be able to focus on this time, and I hope you'll feel involved. I'm going to read our passage for us. It's from Hosea chapter 11. So I'll give you a second just to find that. It's on the same sheet with the songs and the prayers that you've already found. And I'm going to read verses 1 to 11, Hosea chapter 11. When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. The more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up by their arms, but they didn't know that I healed them. I led them with cords of kindness, with the bands of love, and I became to them as one who eases the yoke on their jaws, and I bent down to them and fed them. They shall not return to the land of Egypt, but Assyria shall be their king, because they refused to return to me. The sword shall rage against their cities, consume the bars of their gates, and devour them because of their own counsels. My people are bent on turning away from me, and though they call out to the Most High, he shall not raise them up at all. How can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboim? My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my burning anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim, for I am God and not a man, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. They shall go after the Lord. He will roar like a lion. When he roars, his children shall come trembling from the west. They shall come trembling like birds from Egypt, like doves from the land of Assyria. And I will return them to their homes, declares the Lord. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that it's only a week since we met together physically up in the church building. One of the wonderful constants that we've already talked about during this week when coronavirus has roared has been the evident devotion in this church family to keep God's voice and his word at the heart of our family life, and to keep connected to each other as a family, because that is what we are. We've been going through this Old Testament book of Hosea on Sundays, this prophet whose audience and culture you'd think would be very removed from us, and yet we're finding, as we hear God's voice here, it is timeless and relevant, as God's voice always is. We interrupted this series last week for a one-off talk on fixing our eyes on Jesus during the coronavirus. And you can find that there on the website. I hope that will be useful to you, and you may want to pass it to other people as well. Look at Jesus' reaction in John 11 as he stares a broken world in the face. And inevitably this week there's been an awful lot of the "where is God" conversations. So the Pope says he's asked God to stop coronavirus. Kourtney Kardashian is being slammed for suggesting it's a punishment from God. Any number of online Christian preachers saying similar to that. And the New York Times, one of their columnists, asking the question, is God self-quarantining during the epidemic? The question I want us to think about and explore for a few minutes is the question that Hosea chapter 11 explores. What kind of father is God? I mean, what kind of father is he at the end of a week like this? No kind of father? An absent father? Even an abusive one? Look at the Father. That's what we're going to do now. And I pray that as we do, we will take up Hosea's call to come home. And I'm glad this has come up as our reading for this week, because I can only really think of one or two other places in the entire Bible where God the Father reveals his heart, himself, in the candid way that he does here. And you can see that that's what he's doing right off from verse 1. It's a bit like a reveal-all interview with God. And in that sense, you might expect it to be a bit like one of those carefully choreographed interviews with a member of the royal family. So will the questioner really push them because they're in the presence of royalty? And how much is the prince going to reveal anyway? God just launches in with all the touchy-feely stuff. Look at the Father. Verse 1. When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. This is point 1 if you're following on the sheet there. So it was an adoption, God tells us as the interview begins. I rescued him out of a slave background, you know. And there was nothing particularly cute when I saw him in the orphanage. But I picked up this fragile child and decided that this was the one. God decided purely out of the goodness of his own heart to love Israel. And as he lifts that nation off the scrap heap of Egypt, remember Exodus, Prince of Egypt? God looks down and he whispers the tender words, "My son." By verse 3, the little one has started taking his first steps. It was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up by their arms. One of the things that I love about having toddlers around is the way that our little Jesse will just instinctively, in certain situations, reach up with the arm, or both of the arms go up at the same time. Carry me. My younger brother and I used to fight for turns to be carried on my dad's shoulder. That was always the really fun place to be. He was the one to teach us how to ride a bike with no stabilizers. And same thing in the swimming pool. First time with no armbands, Pop was right there. Verse 4, God leads them gently, eases the load, bending down to feed. Look at the Father. He never changes. That verse that Rob led us off with made that clear. God is of the unchanging nature that he loves to lead and carry up and bend down and feed. Because that's who he is. And that's the reason why over 700 years later, not to Old Testament Israel, Jesus tells New Testament disciples that when we pray, we say, "Our Father," as we did earlier in the service. It's at the heart of the Christian gospel. Jesus is securing our adoption. And I don't know how you are today, and especially with it being Mother's Day, you may feel father and mother less today for all kinds of painful reasons: bereavement, abandonment, abuse. Or it could just be that mum and dad feel a very long way away in these tumultuous times. It's one of the most precious blessings of the Christian life that we can open our mouths and say the words, "Our Father in heaven," because that's who he is. And with the fears that we're all suddenly experiencing, I mean, who could have ever imagined something like this? What kind of father is God? No picture here of a distant deity wishing us well from the comfort of the balcony, or worse, wishing us ill. The Holy One of Heaven continues to be what we would call nowadays a very hands-on dad. He loves us. He reaches down. He feeds us with all kinds of blessings, even today, and it's right that we remember to count them. He longs to take us up by the arm and lead us, if only we will reach up that hand for help. And so I want to say that whatever is the focus of your anxiety right now, and there are so many things, you almost feel sometimes like you have to start a to-do list for your different anxieties and make some space to worry about the different things. Well, if there's a father in heaven like this to cast it all onto, why wouldn't you? Well, why wouldn't we? That's exactly the question, actually. And that's why point two begins with that awkward word, but. Because in point two, God invites us to turn our attention for a few moments from looking at the Father to looking at what the children are like. As I say, this is point two on your sheet there. And I hope if you've been following this series, you've started to think, how does this connect with the rest of Hosea? How it connects is that love betrayed has been the issue. So far, it's been the language of husbands and wives and adultery to describe the way that his people have been unfaithful to him. We're still thinking about unfaithfulness towards God, but the picture to help us here is that of a dad and his boy. And so God shares with us in the Reveal All interview what happened when the kids started to grow. There's a comedian called Harry Enfield. He used to do comedy sketches around a character called Kevin the Teenager. And sorry, we haven't got a picture of Kevin the Teenager. I think you have to be over 30 and not from overseas to have a clue what I'm now talking about. That probably means about three of us in the whole of Euston Church. Anyway, it was fairly funny. And personally, by the way, I never understood why they called him Kevin. But the first sketch showed the moment of Kevin's 13th birthday. So mum and dad had allowed him to stay up late till midnight. And they're counting down the seconds. And as they're counting down, obviously Kevin's still 12 and all cute and happy. And then they say, 3, 2, 1, happy birthday. And the change is instant. As the shoulders droop and the grumpy moaning begins. And the mum and dad are horrified. He's losing the power of rational thought and the use of his arms. He's become a teenager. And that was it, basically, for all the rest of the shows. Kevin was all, what, I hate you. Let me just say this, Kevin was never like that as a teenager. I was a good boy, or maybe just a late developer. I think I was around 30 when I started to get particularly grumpy. Anyway, a few years of teenage angst can be funny, but it's not funny when it hardens into permanent breakdown of the relationship. I read one mother's story of just a gradual fading of communication from her son. The emails became shorter, the calls less frequent, more one-sided when she did get through. Presents were lovingly prepared, and sent, but no response. And she ended this really sad article like this. My son was a grown-up, and the simple truth was that as an adult, he no longer has to like me. There is no universal law of child shalt love parent forever. Now, in this moment that we're now finding ourselves in, must be awful if that kind of family breakdown persists. And in God's situation, the ingratitude started almost immediately. This child didn't even wait till the age of 13. Verse 2, the more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. Now remember, if you've been following this series, Baal was one of the so-called gods of the day. A small wooden statue of him in the farmer's field seems to help production. Can you see already why the father that we've just described would take that so personally? So we've been thinking about Mother's Day, and again, happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. Imagine for them it was Father's Day, but instead of sending the card to the parent that we've just described, they send it to Baal. To Baal! You're the best dad in the world. It's outrageous, isn't it? And to us, obviously, just a bit weird, but it's what everyone else was doing. Paying homage to the superstitions and so-called gods that they imagined were providing for their real-world needs. And maybe they weren't the only people in history to misdirect the greeting card. Thank you, Zeus. Thank you, Thor. Thank you, Allah. Thank you, Lucky Charm. And it's not even just about the false gods of religion. Thank you, company, for the job. I'll do anything for you. Thank you, education system, for all that you're going to provide for me in the years to come. I give myself to your demands undividedly. Thank you, insurance policy, healthcare system, for all the security I have in you. Well, it's complicated, isn't it? Because some of those things are good things, obviously, in their own right. But if ever there was a week for us to reflect on who we can trust as our real provider. Verse 3. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up by their arms, but they didn't know that I healed them. I led them with cords of kindness. And because this ignored father is also the judge of all, that means that the pattern that we saw last time has to follow. Verse 5. Assyria shall be their king because they have refused to return to me. Decisions have consequences. Actions come back at you. That's what God's justice is all about. That's something we all agree on at the big level. We want a world where people reap the consequences of what they sow, don't we? For good or for bad. God is the most patient father in the universe, but he is still the judge most high. Verse 7, my people are bent on turning away from me, and though they call out to the most high, he shall not raise them up at all. Bent on turning away from God is a powerful phrase, a description of all humanity. Israel were compared to Adam in an earlier chapter, and like Adam, they will face the consequences of walking away from a father who has been so kind. Do we face those consequences? Well, you'll hear all kinds of speculation on the internet by pastors. Corona is God's judgment on China or America for this specific thing. Please don't listen to that stuff from people who are utterly speculating and have no right to presume that they know the mind of God. But we need to be humble. And without saying that any given individual is suffering because of a specific sin of theirs at the moment, Jesus rebukes people when they make that kind of suggestion. COVID-19 is just the latest shocking reminder that the world is not the way it's supposed to be, because we are not the way we are supposed to be. That's partly cause and effect. Ignoring a good father's loving instructions will, of course, get you into trouble. Our broken world testifies to the fact that we've clearly done that. But we have an even bigger problem. See, what's described here, we saw previously, is a picture of a future day of judgment. And we think a day of judgment, that sounds so vague and weird. Here's what punishment by the Father in that way looks like. Verse 7, my people are bent on turning away from me, and though they call out to the Most High, he shall not raise them up at all. That's a chilling thought, isn't it? And we're tempted to blame God this week, but imagine what it would actually look like to be separated from every good provision of his. It would mean, in a sense, getting what we wanted, being away from him. It would mean getting what we deserve. And yet, we had an awkward but that began point two. Here is a wonderful and yet to finish with. And as we move into our final point, verses 8 to 9 are the shocking new development. This really is access to the inner chamber of God's emotional life. And these are the verses that summarize the great hope for a world in shock this weekend. The hope is, look at the Father. Four times in verse 8, did you notice what he says? How can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I hand you over? How can I? How can I? A justice says he should. The punishment fits the crime. He wiped out the places mentioned in verse 8 that were so wicked, they got justice. But we're talking about God's son, Israel, who he's promised to love forever. And God says, how can I? Worth saying, in this moment, God is not scratching his head here thinking, I wonder what the way is out of this conundrum. He knows everything. He never changes. He feels all his passions fully at the same time. We can't get our heads around this. But here is a window into a God who is full of the most righteous indignation in the face of human sin and beats the warmest heart of compassion in the universe as well. And just at the moment when God sounds more shockingly human, maybe than anywhere else in the Bible, it's only the fact that God isn't human that can save the day. Verse 9, I will not execute my burning anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim. For I am God and not a man, the Holy One in your midst. And I will not come in wrath. God alone in the universe can find a way through this. It's an impossible stalemate from a human point of view. I mean, how can you be all justice and punishment fits the crime and be all mercy and promises to bless as well? Whether you're talking about just a naughty child or a murderer, It's impossible when you are a limited human being dealing with sinful human beings. You will end up compromising somewhere on justice or compassion if you try to be fully both. The Holy One, which is means the different one, he can find a way. What kind of father is God? Well, in verse 10, he roars like a lion, not to devour his people. We had a scary lion reference previously. This is more Aslan-like, verse 11, because this roar rallies in the children safely home. And I think it must have been a bit of a mystery, this chapter, to a lot of people for a very long time. The nation never really came home properly. They were always oppressed by someone, right up to the Romans. And while it's clear that it is a promise that God will find a way to resolve the tension of his judgment and his mercy, it leaves us asking when? How? Who? 700 years after Hosea wrote this, a guy called Matthew wrote a gospel where he joined up the dots. A child called Jesus was born and had to flee to Egypt as a refugee and was then brought safely out of that place. And here is what Matthew says in that famous Christmas reading, Matthew chapter 2, verse 15. He said that happened to Jesus because out of Egypt I called my son. He's quoting this. And his point is that Jesus fulfills Israel's destiny as God's firstborn. Except here is a son who the Father is always pleased with, who always trusts and always obeys the Father's will. And he obeys and obeys and obeys all the way to the cross, where the righteous swapped in for the unrighteous to bring us to God. How can Father God be all justice and all compassion as well? Well, here, at the place where wrath and mercy meet. Coronavirus is roaring loudly, isn't it? It's a terrible roar. We don't know yet how terrible it's transformed our lives. But it's not the biggest roar in history. On the cross, the lion roared. And we have big questions this week. Does God see? Does he care? Is there justice? Is there mercy? Is he still committed to the human cause? Big, serious questions. And God has a big, serious, bloody answer. The cross and the resurrection of his son are the biggest roar in history so far. And for 2,000 years, the children, having been scattered all over the world, have been returning to the Lord. Trembling as they return, humbled. We have been humbled, have we not? And if your instinct this week in your trembling has been to run to the Father, you are no fool. And if on reflection you feel like you've been living the shell of a religious life, offering a nod in his direction occasionally, or maybe no nods in his direction, come home. Look at the Father. Look at how he feels towards his wayward children. Look at what he's done. If only we will lift up that toddler-like arm and allow him to embrace us. No promises of an easy route through the crisis if you cry out to him. But in Jesus, the blessings of forgiveness, of being led through this ahead by his cords of kindness, and knowing in his family a certain ultimate future. Look at the Father. And as you look at him, can I urge you, as Hosea does, to come to your senses and come home.